What's up, Playlisters? Brian from Playlist Wars here. Just want to let you know that while this show is on hiatus, both Gomez and I have separate shows that are part of the Playlist Wars extended universe, if you will. Gomez has the Sleevey G Show, which you can find at SleeveyGPodcasts.com. And I have a new show entitled My Weekly Mixtape, which you can find over at MyWeeklyMixtape.com. Both shows are also available on all podcast platforms just by searching Sleevey G Show or My Weekly Mixtape. And Playlist Wars will be back soon. Thank you guys so much for your continued support of the show.
This is Playlist Wars.
Welcome to Playlist Wars. I am part of the dynamic duo co-host Gomez, and I got my partner in crime, Brian Colburn. And with another SMHS reunion, our special guest, he played Linus and You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, and he played Nathan Detroit as Guys and Dolls. Let's welcome Chris Hartman.
Hey, man, what's going on? It's good to be here. Thank you so much for asking me to do this.
Dude, this is awesome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's been 25 years since we shared the hallowed halls at SMHS. This is going to be a lot of fun.
I agree. It's been far too long, and we were already off the pod talking about a couple of memories. So, yeah, it's sparking a few things.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, you knew there was no way Gomez was going more than 10 seconds without mentioning Guys and Dolls. And I was going to refer to you as Linus because that's just what I remember being Schroeder. You are Linus as far as I'm concerned.
None of you had to dance with a blanket. I don't care. None of you had to waltz around with a blanket.
No. Wait a minute. You didn't have to wear a t-shirt saying stew pot and put on a hula skirt and coconut bra.
This is true.
God.
I have you beat.
Yeah, this is true. I'll give you that one.
And Gomez still wears that coconut bra.
No,
see, I wanted to go
that's
there.
Why we're not video.
I'm glad you went there. I'm really glad you went there.
Well, I had to beat somebody to the punch because I know someone was bringing that up.
That was a lot of fun, though. It was ridiculous. So we had so much fun. And you know what was so awesome about that drama club, too? Everybody did other stuff. So, like, everybody was either, like, on football or ran track or was in, like, some other game. And everybody's like, ah, you know, drama clubs, whatever, the nerds and stuff. Yeah, we were nerds, but we did all kinds of other stuff, too. We had a lot of fun in that drama club.
Oh, dude, it was great. I was actually, you know, nervous going into You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, because I'm like, oh, great, they're going to think, you know, a dumb football player is not going to know anything about music. And to me, I've always been a music freak on top of playing sports. So to me, it just felt natural to want to try something like that while I was still in high school. And obviously, Charlie Brown was like one of my favorite cartoons growing up. I already knew all the songs from You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown because of the cartoon special.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, this is about as good as if they were doing Grease. So let's do this. I'm in.
It was perfect. And having Chris there too was doing Charlie Brown was so good.
He was a perfect Charlie Brown.
Well, I gotta think I'll give a little shout out to Mr. Conti. He's the one who got me into Guys and Dolls.
Yeah.
He goes, Gomez,
yeah,
I got the perfect part for you. Kept on calling me Big Jewel. It took me a while to realize why he was calling me Big Jewel.
And he had a tough job. He was replacing Miss Hagar, who was like beloved. And he just came in and was just jovial, sweet, took care of everybody, was as nice as pie, and you couldn't have asked for a nicer guy to take over the program. He did such a great job.
He had great talent on that besides yourself. And, you know, I was not that talented, but...
None of us were. It's all right. Don't worry.
Yeah. Well, listen, Nathan, you had one of the harder parts, except for our good old friend Sloan Bruno.
Sloan.
I gotta give him a little shout out too, because he played Sky Masterson. That was a hard part.
Yeah, I know it's tough, and trying to live up to Frank Sinatra and more, those two roles are tough to live up to. But
exactly,
bar set high,
very high.
Asking 17-year-olds to do that, but it was still a blast. It didn't matter.
I was actually 18.
All right. I was not legal yet. So.
I wasn't there for Guys and Dolls. I was in college. Sorry, y'all.
Well, on that note, Brian, we do have rules to this show, don't we?
Yeah, and it's basically this, Gomez. You should just forfeit now because you've lost tonight's episode. No, I'm kidding.
Wow.
Wow. Already we start?
Wow. I've listened to a couple episodes, by the way. This is like the running theme, I've noticed. So.
I'm not finished yet. I'm going to lose this episode too. I'll be honest. I'm really excited about this. But first, let me say what we're going to lose here. We have each picked our 10 favorite songs by a band. and we've created playlists with those songs, track 1 through track 10. And tonight we're going to go through our playlist to kind of make an argument as to why our playlist is the best. This is a band that we're doing tonight that I have a love-hate relationship with. The songs I love by this band, I love. But the other stuff, I loathe. So before we even dive into it, Chris, why don't you tell us why you're excited to talk about U2 with us tonight?
I'm really pumped. They have become, over, geez, I guess it's now the last 25 years or whatever, hands down my favorite band. And this band probably came to me at just the perfect time. It was right at the end of high school, and I was just getting into like singing and things like that and starting to think with, if you guys remember John Paulson, I was thinking about getting into a band with him and everything. And, you know, college was going to be starting soon and stuff. And all the bands I liked were a lot harder. I was into Metallica. I was into the grunge scene with Nirvana, and I was into Pearl Jam and all that other stuff. And somebody played me a couple tracks of U2. And I was like, wait a minute, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. That's U2? It's like, that's not U2. And they were like, yeah, that's U2. And I was like, oh, like that song is incredible. Like, I can't believe how deep it is. And it's just, and Bono's voice is melodic and it's soulful. And it's like, that's U2? That Irish, really? And it was just this conversation. And I fell in love. I completely fell in love with this band. I went backwards through their catalog. 97 bought that pop album. And then it was a love affair with this band from there on in. I've seen them every single time they've come into the New York area live. Didn't matter how much it cost. I didn't care. Their lyrics speak to me. Their music speaks to me. When I play guitar, I like to cover their tracks. I'm just so pumped to do this. This band means a lot to me, especially in my musical journey.
Awesome.
For as long as I've known you, I knew you always loved music. And, you know, it's really cool to hear how much you love the band. So we're looking forward to get involved in our track one. And I will say, Chris, you will start it off for us, since I have a bad habit of going myself first.
Could we just make one rule before Chris gives his number one? Could we all agree that if anybody picks the song Numb, we just turn their mic off and they're banned from the show? Could we just do that now?
All right. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I did not pick Numb.
Oh, thank God. Please, God, Chris, please tell me you didn't pick Numb.
Well, No, I didn't.
Okay. That video with Edge with the feet all over his, I hate that song so much.
Did you know that was Bono's feet?
I don't want to think about that.
That video was just, oh.
Oh my God, hey, I almost spilled my coffee.
You know what, guys, before we even like get into it, that's a really good point. Like, but like U2 can be like, they're a super band, right? They're right up there with some of the bands, like we mentioned Metallica and Guns N' Roses. They're a super band, right? But they can be divisive because Bono can go off into like his pop. I might agree with him politically a lot of times. Sometimes though, it's just like, bro, shut up. Play a song. Seriously, just play a song. You know, and that he can definitely be a bit divisive. It can be tough.
All right, Chris. So let's get down to it, man. Track one.
So for me, my first track is the track One from the 1991 album Octoon Baby. Like, guys, to me, this is the quintessential U2 song. Bono's vocals are beautiful. They're soulful. The guitar is simple, but it moves to this crescendo at the end. And the rhythm section is like almost hypnotic throughout the song. And I don't know if you guys know, but this song is actually the catalyst for the Octoon Baby album. They got really self-indulgent during Rattle and Hum, and they were just burnt out and they were fighting. And Edge one day was just jamming this song on guitar around an A minor. And they just came together and rediscovered their magic. And bang, the album hits after that. The lyrics are amazing. Cuts to the heart of any relationship. They can be used for geopolitics, minority groups, anything. And this album easily stands as one of their best, even to this day. And it all started because of the song One. So easily, this is my top track.
Well, that's interesting, because that's actually my number one, too.
Boom!
Oh! You know, One, I think, is one of their better songs in this album. I can't stop listening to this day. The lyrics to the song is unreal. And one of my favorite lines is actually in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Is it getting better or do you feel the same?
Yeah.
Something that, you know, it makes you wonder now during these times that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. Granted, like you said, Bono and U2 always had a political thing to it. But now when you're thinking of the times that we're in on the pandemic of Corona and all that and what we all are going through, mm-hmm. it makes you wonder, you know what I mean? Is it really getting better?
Yeah.
It's just that question these days. And it's a great opener because two great minds think alike, but let's see what the third one thinks.
Well, I got good news and bad news, gentlemen.
Uh-oh.
The bad news is it's not my track one.
Okay.
The good news is we have our first trifecta of the night because it's my track six.
Okay. All right.
All right. Okay. Nice. All right. There we go.
This song does mean a lot to me. I've been covering this song since about 97, 98 in college.
Mm-hmm.
I had a chance 25 years ago to play this song during my cousin's wedding reception. In that moment, it meant one thing. And since Colburn and Company has been playing out, this has always been a mainstay of our set lists. It's just a fantastic song, a wonderful message that everyone can get behind. And it is the strongest track on Achtung Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, from what you said, Chris, it being the catalyst, Achtung Baby is a great album. Believe it or not, I don't think it's their best, but we'll get to that a little later. But this song really is this shining example. And then you think about all the people that have covered this song. I think Mary J. Blige was one. Joe Cocker was another.
Dude, that version with Mary J. Blige is out of control.
It's ridiculous.
That version's out of control. It's so good. It gives you chills.
Yeah,
it's
and so the good. Fact that it came from you two to inspire all these different artists from different genres to kind of take this song on and make it their own speaks to the power that this song brings. And it's a fantastic song, but it wasn't my number one.
Okay.
Because you guys both went with your track one, my track one, I wanted to kick off my playlist with what I felt was the most unforgettable opening riff for you two. It's the song that as soon as you hear it, you know it's going to happen. And when the band kicks in, it's just a wonderful moment. And it's Pride in the Name of Love from The Unforgettable Fire.
Nice.
Very
nice.
That opening guitar, just as it's building and the snare starts kind of building up and then the whole band kicks in, it's a powerful moment. And I thought, if this was a concert, what song would I love to hear them kick it off with? Imagine they come out on stage and the first thing you have 70,000 people singing In the Name of Love together. What a way to kick off a night. What a way to kick off a track list, and it's my track one.
That's actually my track six on that, on my list.
So we flip-flopped them. All right.
We flip-flopped. I actually went number six on this one to start off the second half, as Doug Miller would say during a football game on the Beastie Boys episode. I started my track six with Pride in the Name of Love, and like you said, for the reasoning, the guitar. Also, it speaks to everybody.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. And if you guys listen to it, you know, the track's heavily influenced by Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. You know, Shot Rings Out, April 4, right? It's just, it's an amazing track. It keeps in line with U2 and always with politics and religion and a couple of other theme. Love is another big theme. And that is, I've heard them play that, I don't know how many times live, and it gets the crowd every single time. It's not in my top 10.
Whoa!
But it's an amazing song. Yeah, it's not in my top 10, but it's an amazing song.
Now, did you guys know it was in a movie?
Yeah, with the Daniel Day-Lewis movie, right?
Well, yeah, that movie. I forgot the name of that one. But he also, I was kind of surprised it was in this movie, too. In 2000, Moulin Rouge.
Really?
Yes. I said Hello. The same thing. I actually had
I didn't know that either.
Neither did I.
I did not know that.
I am a movie buff, Chris. You know, and Brian knows this. I love movies. I love video games.
We got to get you on The Exiles.
Yeah, surprise me the living crap out of me. That's the best way I could say it.
Definitely a surprise.
Before we finish up this song, I also want to throw, I love throwing cover suggestions out there. And on the one of the Family Values tour CDs, Richard Patrick joined Flyleaf on a cover of Pride, and it was absolutely unbelievable.
It's good.
The singer from Flyleaf does the verses, mm-hmm. and then Richard Patrick hits the high notes, and it's a really great live version. Check it out on YouTube or Spotify, or if you're a nerd like me, get the CD. It's worth it.
I just queued it up while we were talking.
And on top of it, he might have gotten it from Walmart, people. Sorry, I couldn't resist, Brian.
All good. So now we are back to you, Chris, for track two.
All right. So I'm going to go a touch, a little longer, and I promise I won't make them long for the rest of them, but it's just because the song means a lot to me. So my number two is from the 1987 album, Under Joshua Tree. It is Where the Streets Have No Name. That's my second. And this, if U2's got an anthem, I think this is it. The song still gives me chills to this day. That opening organ that fades in, it's ethereal, it's haunting. And then you get that explosion of the guitar, the rhythm, the drum combo that kind of invokes this feeling of like freedom. You could do whatever you want. You could be whoever you want to be. You could do whatever the hell you want. And you'd be remiss if we didn't say this, like the song's performance during the Super Bowl, even though the Rams lost, and I hate the Patriots because of this, because my Rams lost, and I'm so pissed off. And ever since that started my hatred of Tom Brady.
You should have been a Giant fan, man.
But every person in that stadium crying, Bono showing the American flag under his jacket while the names of the dead are scrolling behind him, is a moment that I don't think many people are going to forget. And the last thing I'll mention before I throw it back to you guys is I remember a few years ago, they took a break in between their Songs of Innocence and Song of Experience tour, and they did the Joshua Tree. They just did the Joshua Tree album. Basically, it was like a greatest hits. That's all it was. It was all their early hits, then the Joshua Tree, then their later hits. And they started on this little side stage. They did I Will Follow. They did In the Name of Love. They did a bunch of songs. And then their huge, massive HD screen starts, and this song opened with Where the Streets Have No Names. And they did the whole album. I've never seen the Meadowlands Stadium explode like that, with people jumping up and down, hugging one another, singing along with them, 90 some odd thousand people. Incredible moment. And this song in 2017 or whatever it was that I went to go see that, still did that to 90 or 100,000 people. That is absolutely my number two, and I can listen to that anytime.
Actually, that's my number three.
Hey!
Damn, Chris, that's twice you did this to
me.
Sorry,
man. Nah, undercutting. I apologize.
No, no worries. Where the Streets Have No Names is actually my number three. I love the entrance to this song, the build up to the song. If anybody remember the music video,
yes,
when they did the live on the street and everyone's going, "What is going on?" I get goosebumps watching that video because it's like you're wondering what people are thinking. The hairs on the back of my neck is standing up. That's how much that video is so awesome, the way he did it for the fans. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the song still has, it's amazing that it still has that ability to make your hair stand up like that. That's great to hear. That's great to hear.
It's an amazing track. Unfortunately, it is an honorable mention for me. It didn't make my top 10. believe it or not, I have a track coming up that I was arguing all the way pretty much up to right before we recorded, and I went with a different cut, and I can't wait to explain why. But we'll just hold that for now. So Gomez, while we're here, it's track two for you now.
So track two for me is actually With or Without You.
Nice.
It was one of their, I wouldn't call it like a power ballad, but it felt like it was, you know what I mean? It just, the way he just sings the song, I just can't say enough of it. It's just his voice could really put you in a, I guess a trance, you could say, just to fall in love with the song. And, you know, another thing is I remember watching, another movie. It was in the movie Blown Away with Tommy Lee Jones trying to sing the song. And with his fake Irish voice, just brings back good memories of the song. And, you know, just an overall great job by U2 with that song. And I think probably in the Joshua Tree, besides The Streets Has No Names, is one of my favorite songs out of that whole album.
Yep. Well, I'm going to agree with you on that, Gomez, although it's not my track two. It's my track seven. It is the band's biggest hit. It made them go from a big band to a massive band. This is the thing that launched the Joshua Tree into the stratosphere. And at my age at the time, believe it or not, this was a song that introduced me to U2. And then I went backwards from here. And being a bass player, that bass line, it's so simple. But can you picture anything else in that song other than what he's doing? It's perfect. And then I'll see Gomez's movie reference and throw in a TV show reference, because my wife has watched the Friends TV series, I don't know, 17 million times.
I know the episode you're going for.
So I've seen Friends 17 million times. And when Ross and Rachel are on a break and they're having their troubles and they're both staring longingly out the window and stuff, this is playing, and it's a memorable TV scene for people that know that show. And I've been covering this song since 2000, back with The Fourth. We used to throw this in when we had to play like 3-hour sets. Mm-hmm. And I love singing it. It's just a fantastic melody, because you get to go from these really low registers and then hit the kind of the high notes. And
Absolutely. This
song just sits right in my range. And I'm lucky, because had it been one half step higher on the guitar, I wouldn't be able to sing it. Like, it's just right at the top. And I just love this song so much. It's Gomez kind of mentioned it being a ballad. I would consider this a power ballad in a way. And it's probably one of the most memorable power ballads of the 80s, maybe alongside of Alone by Heart.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
If I had an 80s power ballad mix, both songs would be on it. So that's just, right. I'm just, yeah. So, Chris, what are your thoughts on With or Without You, and did it make your track list?
It's in my honorable mentions. It is not in my top 10.
Whoa.
It is exactly what you said. It is an incredible song. It might be one of their catchiest and probably is one of their most well-known, if not their most well-known. You're right. This song absolutely put them on the map, too. It was all over the place, and it was all over the place for years. And the DJ at my wedding knew what a U2 fan I was. And my wife and I were trying to eat because, you know, you eat for what, 5 minutes during your wedding? I mean, that's really.
Yeah, of course. You know?
And the song came on and she looked at me and was like, this is a weird song to dance to, but you want to dance to it? And I was like, yeah, let's dance to it. So we did. And I just have a really beautiful memory of dancing with her to
that's
this
awesome.
Song. And it's my favorite band, my favorite girl. Boom. Right. Like it was just like it was a really cool moment for a few minutes there in between the insanity of our wedding. But it just snuck out of the top 10.
Ooh, if I was your wife, I think you'd be sleeping on the couch tonight.
I'm going to have to agree with Brian on that one.
But it wasn't our wedding song, so I'm saved by that one. So it was that okay. way, so. No, it was a Bon Jovi song. It was our wedding song, so I'm lucky there.
Which Bon Jovi song?
Thank You for Loving Me.
Okay. Oh, great one from Crush.
Good one. Very good one.
Yeah, it was
great
a great
tune,
song.
Great tune. Yeah. So my track two, moving along here, because you guys have yours done. Starting with Pride, I wanted to kind of up the energy right from the get-go. And in, I want to say 2007 or 2008, U2 and Green Day did a song together called The Saints Are Coming.
Yes.
Which was a cover of the Skids' 1979 tune. That's not the song I picked.
Boo.
But here's the reason. That is a punk cover with a punk band, Green Day, right?
Right.
And yet it's not their punkiest tune. And the one that I chose, I feel really is. And it's Vertigo from How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb. That song has such a punk vibe. It's so gritty and so raw and so aggressive that I think that's punkier, if that's a word, than the cover of The Saints Are Coming. And it's just one of those songs that amps you up and it's exciting and it's fun. And it's the newest song from U2 that I have on my list. And it's 2004. So that kind of sets the tone for where we're going from here on out.
I do have a couple from that album on here. And that's a good, dude, that was like a big comeback album for them. That How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb. They won a couple Grammys for that. That was a big album. So I don't blame you for picking that one.
It didn't make your list?
It didn't.
It didn't.
It didn't.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry, but it is a good song.
Nope, didn't make mine either.
Right. So either I'm doing really, really good or really, really bad, depending on what kind of fan is listening here. So
you know what? You might be in the middle right now, Brian.
I don't know.
You could be even keel. You never know, bud.
All right, Chris, track three. Let's just keep this thing going.
Rolling on. So track three from the 1984 album, The Unforgettable Fire. It's the song Bad.
Ooh.
For such a painful subject, by the way, this is a really uplifting song. I was shocked by it. It's a really simple chord progression, but it's got like all these layers woven into it. And the song's actually about the heroin crisis in Dublin in the 1980s.
Whoops.
Right? Like horrible. Like, I don't know what else to say. And it was taken from the personal experiences of the people that Bono and Edge knew. And I've seen them do a 12-minute long version. I've seen them do live versions where they just go ballistic and then interweave like Rolling Stones songs into it and things like that. They go nuts. It's just as powerful the first time as I saw it than when I just saw it a couple of years ago. It's the same power. And if anything, Bono can't hit those high notes anymore that he used to. And his voice has become more soulful. So in many ways, I think the song has actually gotten better with age. So like, and he's gotten a little bit better that way. It's just a great song, and it's probably way too catchy considering the heavy subject matter. But yeah, number three, I'm going Bad off the 1984 album Unforgettable Fire. It's just a beautiful song.
It is a great song. Unfortunately, did not make my list.
See, I'm whiffing out here too, man. So don't.
I'll say this. It didn't make my list either, but man, do I love that video where they're in the subway and they're all dancing and it's like a. Never mind.
Wait a minute.
No.
Hold on.
Wait a minute.
And that Weird Al covered it? No, never mind.
That was Weird Al. That was another song.
No, honestly, it's a fantastic song, and I love the perspective you put on it because it's an awful subject matter.
Terrible.
But it's a song that almost feels uplifting. And in a way, it kind of reminds me of what the Chili Peppers did with Under the Bridge, because yeah. Under the Bridge is this horrible song about heroin abuse. Mm-hmm. And yet people will sing it arm in arm as if they're like they're finding different meanings in it. And it's extremely interesting. And it speaks to the level of songwriters that you two are as a band, because to be able to take a subject matter that dark and make it almost feel uplifting is magic. It honestly is.
I agree. And they're the type of band that typically doesn't play with a backing track, you know, live. This is one that they have to do because they have that backing that, dun, 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 you know, they have that little kind of organ mm-hmm. going on in the background. So they have to do it and they time it perfectly every time. It's like you said, it's beautiful. It should not be nearly this joyful because it's terrible. I don't care what anybody says. It's horrible. Listen to the lyrics. It's terrible. But the song is so uplifting. You're like, wow. You know, it's going to be a better day. Things are bad, but it's going to be a better day.
Definitely.
So you have Bad, and Gomez, your track two is Where the Streets Have No Name. So we're back to me again. And this is the song where, when we were talking about Where the Streets Have No Name, I said I was going back and forth with. And Vertigo, I said, was the band's grittiest and punkiest track. This song, I feel, is the band's heaviest. And it's Bullet the Blue Sky from the Joshua Tree.
Good song.
This good song's bass just drives this aggressive track, and it's slower, but it's viscerally angry. And it's such a heavy song that POD covered it on the Fundamental Elements of Southtown album. And they were kind of a heavy, hard rock, new metal Christian band. And U2's is heavier than POD's.
That's nuts.
Yeah, the vocals are Bono's heaviest vocals. And he's not screaming, but the way he sings the melody, it just feels so powerful and so heavy. And to me, it's just shocking that this was not a single.
Yeah.
It's one of the best songs on the Joshua Tree. And the fact that it didn't get a single or video to me is a travesty.
It's a great tune, and it is a purely political tune as well.
It is.
Listen to the music. He's not hating on America, but we're the world's police. It's a little nuts. Like, he's really, you got to listen to the lyrics. It's overtly political. But apologies, but it's off my list. I didn't.
No. I mean, no, like when you say political, like it says it right here in one of his lines. The guy comes to me, his face red like a rose on thorn bush, like the colors of a royal flush.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could take that any way you would want with that song.
Mm-hmm.
Being political or non-political, it's a great song. You can go any way with this one.
Some of the songs I resonate with the lyrics, and some of them I resonate with the music. And this is an example of a song where the music really spoke to me.
Yeah, it
drives. And the subject matter didn't. Whereas Pride, the Name of Love, it's a mixture of both. And then One, I think, is lyrically stronger than musically, even though it's a musically fantastic song. So mm-hmm. it's kind of a weird swing that I'm on with these. But Bullet the Blue Sky musically is just one of those songs that just really just is a gut punch for a U2 song, which doesn't happen often. And I kind of wanted to switch it up with the opening of this.
That's a good one. If you're going to go with a switch up, that's definitely a good one.
That is a good one.
Fortunately, I don't.
I got some more switch ups coming your way. Trust me.
Brian took a long time with this one, Chris. I mean, we were texting each other for the past week and a half. Dude, I got to change my top 10 again. I'm like, God.
If at the end of the day that made you listen to more U2, it makes me happy, man.
Yeah.
It makes me happy.
I'm excited to see where this is going. Chris, track four, let's keep this going, man.
So track four is the opening from their 1983 album, War. It's Sunday, Bloody Sunday. And so much has been written about this song. This song is friggin' angry, militaristic. The guitar work is overtly harsh. That little electric violin is piercing. And again, here we go again with like horrible subject matter, right? The inspiration for the song is the 72 massacre. English soldiers killed 14 unarmed protesters in Northern mm-hmm. Ireland, in Derry. That's heavy stuff. And they also make this statement in there about how we're militant pacifists at the same time. It's nuts when you listen to it. And I'm guilty of that too. I'm like, peace, peace, peace. Why am I so militant about being peaceful? It's like, I'll kill somebody to be peaceful. It's when you listen to his words, it's nuts. It's ridiculously catchy. It fires you up. You could be like, yeah, give it to me. All right, yeah, you get that, you know, the drum beat and everything. Powerful live. And the one thing I'll end with is this. If you guys really want to see a good live version of this, go on YouTube and check out the Rattle and Hum version of it, that the band was still raw from the Enniskillen bombing, where a bunch of old people were killed in by an IRA bombing.
I and love
Bono
that version.
Lost his ever-loving mind on stage, and it's just one of the most raw, powerful things I've ever seen. I mean, there's been others, of course, but it's just one of the most raw, powerful things I've seen from a singer that could not contain himself on stage. He just lost it. It was passionate. Anyway, great song.
That was actually my number eight on my
track. I'm just ruining Alex. I feel bad.
No, well, this is the whole point of it. You know
what
I mean?
That's true. That is very true.
Like you said, it was talking about the battle and then, you know, losing family members and losing people in the battlefield and everything. This song, it was... I believe one of the sites created it was the best political protest songs in the time. Huh. But also, when you're listening to it, you hear the drum coming into that song in the beginning.
Good point.
And it just has that build up. And when I was listening to it, I also remembered it was in another movie, actually. As you can see, I pull in the movie stuff in this one.
I like this.
because I am such a movie nerd, as Brian is the music nerd.
Yep, yep.
But we're going to take it back to like 1995. It was actually in the movie Kids.
Really?
Oh, yes. My God. That's right.
Rosario Dawson was talking about it.
Huh.
And I'm not going to go into the explicits of the conversation.
Thank you. Yeah.
But this person was singing the song for her. And they actually did play a little clip of it in that movie.
The only song I remember from Kids was Natural One by the Folk Implosion. If there's a name out of left field for you.
But that's my number eight on my track list.
Fantastic.
It's a great tune. Unfortunately, I'm not going to give you guys the trifecta on this one.
Oh.
It just missed. Honorable mention for me. That opening drum shuffle builds. But the funny thing is, it continuously builds over and over again throughout the song. I don't even know. It's a shuffle almost on the kit. Mm-hmm. And it's so much different than any other song they had. And it's so memorable. However, I took my playlist in a ridiculously weird direction. And there had to be some sacrifices. And this one got cut for me, unfortunately.
All right.
Sad. But it is. Yes. I like what you had to say about it, though. I do.
It's sad, but it's true.
Yes. So, Gomez, we're up to you with track four, then.
Whoa, wait. I get to speak about a track four?
Okay, screw you. Next, I'll go.
No, so, all right. I actually have as my track four, Even Better Than the Real Thing.
Mm.
Just a great upbeat song when you hear it. The reason I truly love this song, too, is I remember, we'll date it back to 1992. MTV Music Awards. Yes, when MTV played music and they actually had award shows.
You mean it wasn't just reality shows?
It was not just reality shows, guys. They did play music. And Dana Carvey was the host of the show. And he comes out dressed up as Garth Algar. And he finds Bono and U2 because Bono was looking for what to watch on the big screen. And there he is. Dana Carvey's playing with Bono on U2, Even Better Than the Real Thing. And it was just one of those great songs. And it was just fun. It was just joyful songs.
That's great. Great, great song for that. A lot of overdubbing in this song. Just is one that is not on my top 10 list. But Octoon Baby, I could listen to that album over and over and over. It's a great tune, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm actually, this is where I get weird with U2. This song doesn't do it for me. Believe it or not, this is probably my least favorite song on Octoon Baby.
Hey, come
on. Really?
Really?
Wow. I'm shocked.
U2 fans are going to hate me, but music's subjective. This song just, there's something about it that doesn't do it for me.
Wow. Okay. I'm a little, heart just skipped a beat here.
Oh. Well, if you think that's weird, wait till you hear my track four.
Oh, crap.
Oh, wow. Here we go. All right, Brian, let's hear that track four of yours.
All right. My track four comes from the Rattle and Hum album. And it's a cover song, and it's their cover of All Along the Watchtower by Bob Dylan.
I can't blame you there, man.
No, neither can I.
I can't blame it.
There are three versions of All Along the Watchtower that people need to have in their lives. Jimi Hendrix.
That's just
Dave Matthews Band.
Amen.
And you too. Sorry, Bob. You wrote a great song, but.
Sorry, Dave Matthews Band. No way.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, those three versions of the song are so different, but they're the exact same song, but they're done so differently. Jimi Hendrix is just a straight up Hendrix song. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dave Matthews Band is kind of earthy and almost rusted root in this jam band kind of and the way they kind of bring almost a world music beat, behind the song makes it really memorable.
Yeah.
And U2's is just like the Spinal Tap, this goes to 11, amp up the speed, amp up the sound, amp up the loudness, and just rock it out. And it's my favorite cover song by the band. And it holds up with the other two I mentioned. Is it like those three songs? I could not pick a favorite of the three versions of that song.
Oh, I could. It really is.
It is a great rocking version of that song. But before we move on to anything else, can we just mention that Alex had a serious problem with you mentioning Dave Matthews Band's version as high as you did. He didn't sound like he was pleased
at all. I am not a huge Dave Matthews Band fan. I will say that. I am casually a Dave Matthews Band fan. But that version is actually my favorite Dave Matthews Band song.
Oh. Oh, okay. So, we're going to have to do a playlist war on Dave Matthews.
I'll tell you this. One of my buddies in college had an extra ticket around 2000 to go see Dave Matthews Band. He's like, come on. I'll give you the ticket. So I went with him to the show. And I turned to him about an hour into it. And I'm like, dude, I want to fall asleep. And now look, I've gone to see Fish and Mo. So I know jam bands.
Yeah.
And I turned to him. And then all the people around were going, yeah, he's off tonight. And
then he's off every night.
The only thing that saved the episode, the only thing that saved that show was their cover of All Along the Watchtower. And when I heard that, I said, okay, this was worth coming out. But the rest of the night was not. And I've never gone to see Dave Matthews Band after that, because even the people in the crowd were kind of just, this was an off night. And I guess once you see a band and they don't hit your expectations, it becomes harder to kind of shell out that hard-earned concert money to give them another try if you didn't jive the first time you see them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I don't want to tangent too much. I've been to a couple Dave concerts, and bro, the only guy I know that can turn a 2-minute song into like a 15 and a half minute jam session with the same four chords over and over and over. I mean, if you're getting the contact high, it's great. But if you're not, it's like, you know, like, I don't know what to tell you.
Just no comment.
So Gomez, not a fan, huh?
I know there is going to be one time we will do an episode of Dave Matthews, and I'm going to have to sit and listen to it.
He says that it like it's a root canal almost.
What a chore.
it would be for me. It's not one of my favorite bands at all. Just overall don't like the band.
Sorry, Dave.
Well, pivoting back to you too, did All Along the Watchtower make either of your lists?
No.
No.
All right. That's where we get weird here. Chris, we're back to you for track 5.
I like weird, though. I have to admit. I like weird. And you two can't get weird. Track number 5, I'm going back to How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb, dude, 2004, as you were talking about Vertigo. So track 5 for me is The City of Blinding Lights. The song was inspired by two visits. It was Bono and his wife visiting London when they were teenagers. They were just kids and not married yet. And then it was when the first time that the band visited New York City to go on tour in 1980. And Bono has said that it's the feelings that hit him every single time he travels to New York City. I love New York. I haven't been to New York since the pandemic. It's killing me. I want to go back. The music, the museums, the food, the everything.
The sports.
Exactly. Everything about it. New York is fantastic. And this song gives you that feeling. It lifts you up to another level. And all the sounds of New York are behind you. And the last thing I'll mention is that I remember going to see them in 2005, I think it was, at MSG. And New York was rebuilding after the 9/11 attacks. And they sang this song. And they darkened the stadium. And behind them, they built New York City behind them.
There wasn't
a dry eye in the entire arena.
I got goosebumps just hearing it.
I know, just thinking about it.
Just an incredible moment, and him ending it just being like, New York, we love you. We're behind you. Like, it was just so beautiful. And you guys know, MSG is just like the cathedral to music.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's so great. But so City of Blinding Lights.
And to wonderful sports of New York Rangers. Sorry. I'm a huge Rangers fan. Yeah, I had to say it. I'm a huge Rangers fan. You know, like you said, Chris, great song. And, you know, the way he describes New York City in the song, neon heart, day glow eyes.
Yes.
The city lit by fireflies. They're advertising in the sky and people like us.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the best lines to represent New York City.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because this is my second favorite U2 song about New York City.
Oh, nice.
Did not make my list because another one did, but we'll get to that later.
Sweet.
So that's all I'll say about it for now. Gomez, sweet. We're back to you. Track five.
Track five. Okay, so I kind of went off a little bit on this one, and I actually went with a movie soundtrack from the Batman Forever soundtrack in 1995.
My man.
Hold me, thrill me, kiss me, kill me.
My man.
I don't know. Something about this song at that time was different from YouTube and perfect for the soundtrack.
Very nice. This is my number nine.
Oh,
I got nice. This one as my number nine. So
there we go. I finally messed up your list. Yes, I did it.
So this is my number nine. And I'm, dude, like this soundtrack, Seal, Brandy, Flaming Lips, PJ Harvey. I mean, you, this soundtrack.
Bones and Harmony.
Bro. Right. Offspring were in this track. This soundtrack is great, but it's the lead track comes in hard. And to me, this is the closest U2 comes to actual hard rock. There's darkness in the song. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you like the line that says they'll want your money back if you're alive at 33, that ties into images that they threw up on screen of artists that died young, like Tupac, Jimmy Morrison, Kurt Cobain, a lot of others. And they're mixing these electronic beats with a 12-string acoustic guitar. It's an awesome arrangement. But to me, U2 is fantastic when they're self-deprecating and they're poking fun at the excesses of like celebrity and rock and roll. And this song is, watch the video. They're just making fun of themselves the entire time. They're making fun of like being rock stars. They have too much money, things like that. The lyrics point to the absurdity of being a rock star sometimes. And the boys are just having fun. And they don't do that nearly enough. They get too religious. They get too political. Just rock out, man. And Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me is just them rocking out, and I love it. So it's my number nine.
Unfortunately, the trifecta killer is back again because it did not make my list. And the only reason I could say is because every time I hear that song, I think of Batman Forever, and I get a bad taste in my mouth.
It's not a good movie.
It's not a good movie at all.
It's not, but you know what's funny? For not being a great movie, had an all-star cast.
Bro.
Great cast, great soundtrack, god-awful movie.
Joel Schumacher messed that up.
He did. God rest his soul. He did.
Yep.
It was just such a piece of crap movie that every time I hear the song, I get like PTSD from the movie itself. So yeah, it's a great song though.
Can we have a moment for Nicole Kidman in that movie though? I mean, can we?
Yes,
sure. Let's pause for a moment.
Let's just bask in that for a little bit.
Yes.
All right. Like her workout clothes. Oh, go ahead.
No. I'm not going with that scene. Shoot.
Oh, okay. You're going with the under the covers in the sheet.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. That's fine.
That's the one I'm going with.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. 15-year-old me was happy with that. Yeah. That's fine.
Yep. Yeah. That was older than you. Jeez.
You guys, everyone's all excited about the Snyder Cut. I'm just like, please don't do another one that was, because after Batman Forever, they had the one that was even worse with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Oh my God, that was so bad.
You mean George Clooney?
And that didn't even have a good soundtrack either. It had that terrible Smashing Pumpkins song on it.
Gotham City from R. Kelly.
That was the only great song out of that whole soundtrack.
It's
Gotham
actually
City.
Catchy. It's a catchy. It is. Oh.
God. All right, back to YouTube.
So yeah, no trifecta on that one. But my track five is the big curveball of my track list.
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
And it's another cover song, believe it or not. This song has been covered by Offspring, Dropkick Murphys, Mariah Carey, John Bon Jovi, Joey Ramone, Melissa Etheridge, Lady A, Smash Mouth, Jars of Clay, and even the original by Darlene Love in 1963. None of them hold a candle to U2's Christmas, Baby, Please Come Home.
You get claps.
From a very special Christmas, Volume 1. I absolutely love this song. I know it's a Christmas song.
Yeah, you went weird on this, Brian. I'm sorry.
Bro, this is left field, man.
I don't care. It is such a great song.
Oh, God.
It's one of my favorite Christmas songs, period. I love their version so much that I literally could not do a U2 list and not include it.
Okay.
And I know it's probably costing me votes, but I just don't care because I love that song so much. And maybe a non-U2 fan might vote for me because they're like, well, hell, at least he's thinking outside the box. I don't know.
I was going to say, someone will probably give you credit on that because I would never have thought about putting that Christmas song. You know what I mean?
No.
I would never have thought about it. I'll be honest with you. And you know what? Just because you did it, I'm giving you brownie points on that one.
All right. It's a deep dive. That deserves credit. Now, full disclosure, like with my band, we play it every Christmas season.
I do too. Well, okay, definitely.
Every time. Yeah.
And it's that version we play.
That's what we practice, that version. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
And I've heard so many versions of that song that, and by great artists that just don't do it justice. And U2's is even better than Darlene Love's version. It's just good. It's the perfect version of the song.
Wow. Look at you. Okay. Yeah, you do get some points. That's left field. That's a deep dive, bro.
That is. Yeah.
But mine won't be as weird moving forward. But Chris, now we're at the halfway point. This is the point. If you were making a mixtape, you'd flip it over. Or if it was a record, you'd flip it over. We are on to track six.
But if it was a CD, we'd just go right to track six. Keep going.
Yeah, exactly. It would just keep playing, which is exactly what we're going to do right now.
So this is where I stray a little bit for you two for track six. So this is from their 1993 album, Zoropa, which is forgotten about by a lot of
people. If you say numb, I'm turning your mic off. This is your chance. Don't say numb.
No, it's not. It is not.
It's going to probably be like Lemon.
It is not. It is Stay, Far Away, So Close. Zoropa is a strange album, man.
Very strange.
Strange album. I mean, Daddy's Gonna Pay for Your Crash Car, Numb, Lemon. We could go on and on. It's strange. They started experimenting with this like trippy electronic sound, and sandwiched in between all that weirdness is a great little quiet song called Stay. And like a lot of U2 songs, it's a little religious. The lyrics are painful. Sounds like someone's reaching out for compassion and understanding, but trapped in an abusive relationship. They want to escape, but there's comfort in staying. Like, listen, the lyrics are, when he hits you, you don't mind, because when he hurts you, you feel alive. It's just painful. The music is simple. It's very raw with a little bit of layered electric and acoustic, slight synthesizer, nice calming beat. I just really like it when U2 goes back to their straight up rock roots. The song's touching. On an album that's filled with utter insanity, you get this beauty. And so to me, and I play it a lot on my acoustic guitar, I love Stay, Far Away, So Close. Great tune.
I'll say this much. I have never heard the song. And there's a reason, because I hate Zoropa so much that I heard the two lead singles, and I have refused for 25 years to ever give that album a listen because I hate Lemon and Numb so much.
You can't do it, right?
I cannot stand either one of those songs, so I never gave the album a chance. I know that sounds snobby of me, but I want my U2 to rock. I don't like the
one blah blah blah.
Shut up and just play your guitar. Now,
bro, it's weird.
It's a weird album, and maybe I'm missing something. And now actually, I will make this a point based on what you said about the song. I will go listen to that track.
Just
after we're done
track.
Recording, but not the rest of the album. I still refuse.
Yeah, listen to that track and tell me what you think.
It's actually a really good song. That was the one song, if I had to choose, but it didn't make my top 10. It actually made honorable mentions on mine.
Nice.
It was a great song. I really wanted to play Numb, but I know Brian didn't like it.
Oh, you should have. You should have picked that as number one, because then I could have just turned your mic off for the rest of the episode.
But no, like you said, they did go through that trippy phase. It makes me wonder what they were doing in the studio when they were making this album.
I don't want to think.
There must have been a lot of Guinness.
I can only imagine, because that Octoon Baby Zoo TV time, they were weird, bro. They were
very
weird.
They were very, very weird.
Yeah. And almost as weird when I saw them in, I want to say it was 98. It was on the pop tour.
That was the pop. Yep.
Yeah, where they came out of the big giant lemon on the stage. That was like, oh, wait, they're in a lemon bathroom break. I don't want to hear anything from Zoropa. Tell me when they're playing Pride.
That came from the band making fun of themselves, too. Like, that's why they're cool sometimes. It's like, yeah, you guys are cool. They made fun of themselves saying, knowing it sucked.
Do you remember the time that they got locked in the lemon?
Yes, I do. Yes,
okay,
I do.
Because they put that album out, I still wish they were there.
Stay there, you bastards. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So track six for Gomez was Pride in the Name of Love, and track six for me was One. So, Chris, we're right back to you for track seven.
Wow, back to back. Okay, so for track seven, I got to go old school. So this is from their first album, boy. And it's the song I Will Follow. It's the opening track of their debut album. I don't know how you can make a YouTube playlist and not have this here, as a fan, at least as a fan. I don't know if you guys know the song, you listen to the song, dude, the song's raw.
Yeah,
the song's raw. It's raw. Bono's vocals are terrible. They're not good. The bass and the drums just kind of thump along, but it's ridiculously catchy. And the guitar work is definitely far from Edge's more like signature sound, but it hooks you in. But what I like the most about it is the song at its core is about the relationship between a son and his mother. And Bono lost his mom when he was a teen. I lost my mom to cancer. I know what it feels like. It hits really hard. Uh-huh. The song drives this point home, that unconditional love that a parent has for their child and how it makes the child feel like anything is possible. They're indestructible. The song's got this great post-punk sound to it. The remaster, by the way, from 2008 really cleaned it up a lot. I like it a lot better than the original track. And it's their first hit. And it still means a lot to me this day when I listen to it and I think about my mom and this song. So I Will Follow had to be on my list. It's my number seven.
It's a great song. And, you know, again, that reminds me of with my dad who passed away with cancer, too. So
sorry.
No, and I'm sorry for you, too, Chris. It's hard, you know, when you lose a parent and there's always that one song. And there's been a couple actually that reminds me of my dad. Not to laugh, and it's kind of funny because there's a couple of songs that there's one that's perfect for my dad, and this is one of them. But it did not make my top 10 at all. Oh. But it's a great song, though.
It's an honorable mention for me because I kind of went all over the place with my list, and it's one of those songs where I have a wheelhouse of U2, and by the time I get to the end of my playlist tonight, you'll hear where my wheelhouse is, and I kind of very rarely stray from that because I felt like there was this one era of U2 that resonated with me both musically and lyrically. And this was earlier than that era. So I love the song. I have the U2 18 album. I would never skip it. It just didn't make my list.
I don't blame you. It's not like you guys said, everybody seems to know it. Everybody knows the song and it's a staple at a lot of their concerts, but it doesn't make a lot of like top lists. But man, when you listen to it and you think about your parents and the relationship and everything,
of course,
it hits home. So for me, it just has a special place in my heart.
The sentiment that you said, I couldn't agree more with. Mine just came from a where my kind of era of U2 sits. And
got it.
Again, it's a great song. I would never say anything bad about the tune. It just got scraped out by a Christmas tune for me, which now I almost feel bad at this point. But that's how much I love that version. Oh man.
No, you got anyway. Go with what you love, man.
Yeah. Well, my track seven is With or Without You. So Gomez, we're back to you for your track seven.
So my track seven, I actually went a little softy on this song. I picked the song The Sweetest Thing.
It's a cutesy one, man.
Bono actually wrote this song for his wife.
Right.
For a birthday present while he was doing what album? The Joshua Tree. And he brings it out many years later. And it was actually pretty funny. This movie was on the other day. I was watching it. It was Mr. Deeds.
That's right.
And he's there with Babe Bennett riding a tandem bike through New York City. And they're playing this song. You know what I mean? And of course, and along that ride, you find John McEnroe throwing beer bottles at
right.
him.
I want to visit Winchesterton Fieldville. I just want to throw that out there.
The fact that she said, oh my God, the town actually exists.
He flies her out there.
In his billion-dollar plane. Well, it's a great song. I love it.
It is. And you know what? You raised a good point. It's a B-side.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s. And I like the new arrangement. A lot of times people will say, nah, I like the older stuff. The new arrangement, when they put it back as a single to celebrate their best of album, and you know, he bought the song out for his wife and everything. And then the very funny, humorous video that went with it. It's just you two having fun, and I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, did not make my list, but it's a decent tune. It's a little outside of my wheelhouse. Although the song, the original, was in my wheelhouse, this one was kind of outside of it. And at that point, I had kind of moved on from U2, except for Vertigo, which reeled me back in for a moment in time. and the cover with Green Day, that also didn't make my list. But Chris, we're back to you with track eight now.
Okay, so track eight. For the last time, I'm going back to 2004's How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb, one of my favorite U2 albums. And the song A Man and a Woman. This is a little bit more emotional, quiet song that actually came from the band just screwing around with a bunch of different sounds. The acoustic guitar, I don't know if you guys know, but in this song actually came from another song that Edge was writing, and they just chopped it up and spliced it into this, and it gives this really like moody tone. And I like it when Bono gets lovey-dovey in some of his songs. And this is a song that explains how your love grows and evolves as you grow and evolve with the person that you fell in love with, your spouse, your partner, whoever it may be. The lyrics are about rediscovering that, like, that more flirtatious, passionate love that we start to lose, I think, sometimes when we're with somebody for too long and you have to try to rediscover like how to be romantic. There's a line in there, I can never take a chance on losing love just to find romance. And, you know, this quick fling is never going to replace the deep love that he has with the person that he fell in love with. And the song ends on, to me, like this pitch perfect line. It's, how can I hurt when I'm holding you?
Yeah.
It's just this beautiful ending to the song. And I just like it when they go for like some of those like deeper love songs and just talk about the people that they love. So I really, really like A Man and a Woman. And it's just a moody tune. One of my faves.
Great song. Not much I can say. Chris pretty much said it all.
Yeah, man, I agree. It's a fantastic song. Didn't make my list, but I understand why it would make somebody's. It is a great tune. Again, outside of my wheelhouse, like I said, I've said that a bunch of times.
It's not a Christmas song, right? So it's like kind of...
No, exactly, right. So
it's not out of left field on that one.
My wheelhouse definitely has a broken wheel on it. I'm perfectly fine with that.
He's got one of the Flintstone wheels.
Yes.
But he's a music nerd, so he's allowed to do that. So remember, yes, he can dip. He can dip. So yeah, I got you.
The wheelhouse has a flat, apparently. I don't know. So Gomez, you had picked Sunday Bloody Sunday for your track 8.
Correct.
My track 8, I want to revisit what Chris was saying earlier about the City of Blinding Lights. That was your favorite song that you two did about New York City.
Yes, sir.
Mine was the second single off of Rattle and Hum called Angel of Harlem.
Ah, yep. Yep.
Okay.
This song makes me feel so good. It makes me so happy that I got to work in New York City for several years. I am close to New York City that I can go see at any time. It makes you love New York City. It also has a horn section, which is something that doesn't happen in a lot of U2 music.
Agreed.
And when you hear it, it makes you wonder why it doesn't happen more often throughout their career, because it works so well. Mm-hmm. And Rattle and Hum is such an amazing album. It is actually my favorite U2 album. With the live stuff and the studio stuff, it is just a perfect encapsulation of what U2 is to me. And this song, again, I'm also a big fan of bop jazz.
Yeah.
John Coltrane and Miles Davis and all the swing bop and the hard bop. And that's all talked about in this song. And it's just such a fun, uplifting tune. And it makes me feel so good that it's about an area that I hold so near and dear to me. So, yeah, Angel of Harlem, my track 8, just such a fun tune.
You nailed it. There's not too much I could personally add to what you said. It's a great homage to Billie Holiday. I mean, they recorded it over at Sun Studio in Memphis, I believe. Just, man, what a throwback, like you were saying, to that era. And at the same time, to a city that I know the three of us love and the three of us adore.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I totally with it. Did not make my list, but I am in 100% support of you putting it on yours. This is such a great tune.
Unbelievable tune. It did not make my list either. But one of my favorite lines in that song is actually, New York, like a Christmas tree. Tonight, the city belongs to me, Angel.
Yep. I'm Love keeping it. With the Christmas theme, man. I hope the show airs in December.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just one of those songs, like you said, Brian. I never had the pleasure of working in New York City, but I had the pleasure, was growing up, being taken to the city almost every weekend by my uncle. And being there, the times of like in the 80s and early 90s, when my uncle was able to take me every Sunday just to go to Central Park, museums, Empire State Building, Twin Towers at that time.
Yeah.
Washington Square Park.
Right.
All those areas, you know, you just cannot go wrong being in New York City, one of the best cities in the world, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, Chris, we're skipping you because your track 9 is Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me.
Yes, sir.
So, Gomez, we're going right back to you for your track 9.
So, my track 9, I went with New Year's Day.
Nice.
Good tune.
Great song. Very good tune. One of my reasons for this song is the bass line in the beginning of the song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. As a bass player. Yes. Yes.
Exactly. That beat to it. And I'll say this. I was never, I'm not gifted like you are, Brian, or you, Chris.
I'm not gifted either. I just BS my way through it.
You
man.
Heard me sing before? I mean, come on. Anyway, come
yes,
on.
I have.
Yeah, I apologize to you. That's
no, but listen, playing an instrument, you guys have the talent to do it. Unfortunately, I did not. I tried, and the reason I wanted to play bass was because of this song.
Mm.
You know, and I remember watching the music video to this song. I mean, it was probably like 30 below when they did this video. The whole song, it lyrically is unbelievable. One of the lines that always sticks out to me is, "Under a blood-red sky, a crowd has gathered in black and white."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you could date back a little bit. I hate to say the words of 9/11.
Yeah, yep. It's true, though.
And this is what we stood together as one, you know, what we had to fight for in our lives here. You know what I mean? And just that, like I said, the opening of the bass on that song just drew me into that song.
Well, the bass line, I'll say this, something with the bass in U2 songs. This isn't Les Claypool here.
Right.
These are simple bass lines, but they're memorable. And they grab you and pull you in like Bullet the Blue Sky and With or Without You and New Year's Day. They're not bass lines that are all over the place, but they just know how to pull you in. They're very memorable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I've always appreciated about U2 is that type of hook that is brought to the bass lines in their music.
Yeah, Clayton is, surprisingly, people wouldn't think it because, you know, Edge and Bono get all the attention. Right.
Yes.
And then they get every, and then, and as the years went on, they really started writing more of the lyrics and everything. But Larry Mullen and Adam Clayton actually do write a lot of the music. They do. And they're obviously they're the rhythm section and they joke around. They call them the other two. Right. That's like that's like the joke.
The joke for you two.
Yeah. and you know, and Adam, a lot of his stuff is 4/4. Right. It's like very like dun, 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 you know, like whatever. And he's jamming along. But bro, there's something beautiful about being able to tap my feet to that over and over again and have it humming it in my head. And there's genius in that as well. And he knows it and he plays it really damn well. And this song is absolutely an example of that.
Now, Chris, did it make your list?
It did not. It did not.
Okay. It did not make mine either, but we're up to my track 9. And now here's where I'd say this is my last weird one, but it's not really weird when you think about who I am musically. U2 had a chance to collaborate with a couple of times with amazing musicians.
Mm-hmm.
One of them being Green Day, which I mentioned earlier on the Saints Are Coming.
Uh-huh.
And on Rattle and Hum, they got to do a song with B.B. King called When Love Comes to Town.
Love where you're going.
And if you have B.B. King on your song, you're a legend. Because B.B. King is one of the greatest, most memorable, most influential guitarists of all time. And he's in a completely different genre, blues. And this is B.B. King's most rocking song. And it's kind of U2's most bluesy song because of the feel that B.B. King brings to it.
Right.
And you would think that these two would mix like oil and water, but they don't. They come together perfectly. And it's just such a fantastic song. Great lyrically, really tell, again, it's that story of love that you talk about that resonates through a lot of Bono's lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And B.B. King's snarl when he sings his verse, it just works so well together and it's so much fun and it's such a great addition to that Rattle and Hum to the live music. And it was on a B.B. King album as well, but people know it from Rattle and Hum. And it's one of my favorite U2 songs. And I know it's, again, not a single, really should have been.
Great song. It's not on my list, but it is a fantastic song. And I'll give you a very brief story. Like for my bachelor party, what is everybody, you know, they go to Vegas, they go to strip clubs, right? That's what everybody does. They go to parties.
Not really.
My friends took me to B.B. King's, bro. That's
what awesome.
We did. We went to B.B. King's and we saw live music. And that's what we did. We sat and drank and ate and watched guys play blues. And that's what we did. And then we met up with the girls afterwards at a bar and we all just got together and just had an awesome night.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
So it's not on my list, but bro, mad respect. Cause that is kick-ass song.
Well, absolutely. My bachelor party was a little bit boring, but I enjoyed it. We went to the horse track and we won some money.
Dude, I'll take
yes,
money.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Well, listen,
And believe it or not, it was because of a trifecta.
It really was. But what's kind of funny is that Brian picks the three biggest mules of the group of horses that raced, and we won some cash.
Nice.
So when I came home and my wife goes, "How was your night?" I go, "Here, honey, I got money for you." She loved me forever.
I think the five of us, I think it was a $1,300 payout on that trifecta.
Yes.
And five of us went in on it for $3 each. It was something like a stupid low amount of money because everyone was making fun of me because I'm like, let's just pick the three shittiest horses and bet on them because who cares?
And they hit.
Winning.
Yeah.
I still can't believe it to this day. I still can't believe it.
Well, this is kind of cool because we're at the last track of the night and nobody's has been chosen yet. So the floor is wide open for track 10. And we've never had this before because usually a track 10 gets picked throughout the episode. This has never happened before.
Which I'm kind of surprised because between the three of us, Brian.
Yeah.
I mean, we're picking all great songs. And it's kind of funny. We're almost picking from the same albums. I thought Chris might have taken my list somehow, you know, with the first couple of songs, but he didn't.
Yeah, this is really cool. And so far, only one trifecta, which I also like.
Mm-hmm.
This sooner or later, Gomez and I have been saying there's going to be an episode where we have like seven trifectas. But I love the fact that there's so many different angles and different songs that resonate with the three of us that these are totally different playlists.
Yeah,
definitely.
So why don't you tell us why Numb is your track 10, Chris?
Wow, all right. That ended it. Sorry.
So Numb is my track 10 because I really think that... No.
I almost believed you there, too. Oh, my God.
So I went with, for my first track, I went with Quintessential U2, right? So we went with one. So for my 10th, to close out my playlist, I'm going with a song off their most recent album from Songs of Experience in 2017. It's their rocky, if you will, their rockiest tune from that, called You're the Best Thing About Me.
I am?
Yes, you are. You didn't know that goes with?
Anyway. No. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist that one.
This is such a better album than Songs of Innocence, that crap one that they forced into everybody's Apple accounts a couple of years
ago. I'm glad no one's picked anything from that, by the way.
It's a crap album.
It's a crap album. I didn't want it on my phone. I didn't ask for it. No. Leave that off my phone, damn it. No.
Bad move by them. It really was. But this one, see, to me, this is U2 going back to who they are. Great rock songs, great love songs, a couple of songs that have a harder edge to them, like American Souls, just a really good driving rock song talking about America and just rock and roll. But this song was inspired actually by a nightmare Bono had where he did something horrible and his wife divorced him in his dream. That was in the nightmare. Ooh. And the lyrics flowed from there. And if anybody knows about Bono, his wife is his rock. She is his rock. Ali is his rock. And the lyrics flowed from there. And it's just simply about a person remembering why the individual they love is so great and why that person makes them feel the way they do. And it asks that question, why is when everything is perfect, we have a tendency to screw it all up? We do it every time. And there's lyrics in here where he says, you're the best thing about me. The very best thing that ever happened to a boy. You're the best thing about me. The best things are what's easy to destroy. And I told you guys before, I love the simple love songs. I love when U2 goes and they return to this kind of stuff. Very catchy, very simple. So to me, it was the best way for me to close out my playlist to go back to what I love about U2, but it is their newest song. So to me, it was a good closing.
Interesting take, man. I obviously, like I told you, I didn't choose anything after 2004 because quite honestly, after Songs of Innocence was the one that they forced on the other. Okay.
Yep,
after that, I have not listened to anything since then. I'm not going to lie. And I knew where my songs were coming from, so I didn't even bother. So after hearing what you said about the new album or their newest, I'm actually going to check that out too, because that actually sounds like something I would enjoy because the way you're describing it. So I'm going to give it a chance.
I would try that. I got to go with you guys. Songs of Innocence. I'm a U2 fan and I did not. There's like three songs on that album I like. It's not a good effort. Not a good effort. Songs of Experience return to form for U2. They learned their lesson. I thought it was quite good.
All right. Gomez, what's your track 10?
So my track 10 actually has a little meaning to it. I did take it out of All That You Can't Leave Behind album from 2000. Beautiful Day.
Ah, nice.
This song has significance for me. The day I got married, and Brian, you were a part of that. You were one of my best men in that wedding, and it means a lot that you were there. And we're talking about this, and it was actually in my photo montage of my wife.
I remember.
And I right now, as I tear up a little bit thinking about it right now, one of the best moments was meeting Laura. And it was the best day and the beautiful day that I ever met her. And I say it holds a lot to me to have her so many years later now together with two kids, and how much I truly love my wife. And I think of that every time. I think of the montage with all the pictures that we had. It just brings a great thing. And it reminds me, the one line that I love, it's a beautiful day. Sky falls. You feel like it. It's a beautiful day. Don't let it get away. Mm-hmm. And the day we got married was the one day I didn't want the day to end. Having my best friends right next to me who've been there throughout everything, especially Brian, Drew, Jay, my old friend Tom, my brother-in-law Michael, all them there next to me with Laura and her wedding crew, all of them was just the greatest thing ever. And, you know, just saying the words I do to her and hearing that song when we were at the reception, it just brings a lot of great things.
It's a great, great tune. And nice. I remember that well. I just want to give props to Larry Mullen on that one, mm-hmm. because the drums really drives it along, and it sounds different than any other U2 tune. And it's definitely one that stands out to me for that reason alone.
I agree. And you know what? Live, it's one of my honorable mentions, Gomez. I mean, it's a beautiful song, beautiful song, beautiful day. It's a beautiful song. And this became a staple live for mm-hmm. them. And it can bring a crowd up. It definitely can. If there's a lull a little bit, most of the times in a U2 concert, there isn't. But if you're feeling a little bit of a lull, man, you hear that opening track, holy crap. You know, everybody starts, you can, you know, and then whenever they sing It's a Beautiful Day and the chorus hits, the lights are all on and it's everybody's jumping up and down, and it just has a very uplifting feel to it. I'm so happy that it was part of your wedding day. That's amazing.
And let me tell you this way. It was a hard choice when we were choosing that for the photo montage. And
it was between that and the Two Live Crew, right?
Two Live Crew was not part of that. But you know, it was just that song just means so much to me. And that's the way I want that to end my track. Something that meant way much more than any other song. So that's how I ended it.
All right. You guys ended it with like odes to love and stuff. And I ended mine with a song that I just think is the band's most stripped back, fun, laid back, kind of rocky, but kind of acoustic-y tune. And it's my favorite U2 song ever. And I'm shocked it didn't come up on any list because it was a single. Mm-hmm. To me, it was their best single ever. It's literally my favorite song by the band. Again, I'm going back to Rattle and Hum. Mm-hmm. It's Desire.
Oh, it's a cool tune.
Great song.
It strips the band of that excess that they're now known for.
Right.
And it kind of encapsulates to me what U2 is. They're just four guys that play fantastic music. And this song, Bono's vocals were never stronger. And we talk about the bass lines that Adam brings to these songs throughout my playlist. When the band breaks down and it's just a boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a hard bass line to play, but it's so damn catchy and so perfect for the tune. It's one of the, and when he hits the high notes about our sisters won't let you go, like Bono never screams like that. It's like this gut-wrenching scream when he hits those high notes. I don't know if he could do it anymore, but it's the band at their most fun and their most laid back, coming off the Joshua Tree. It was their last kind of rock statement before they started experimenting on Achtung Baby.
Right.
Beyond.
Right.
And to me, this is kind of the exclamation point at the end of my set list for just what I love about the band. They're kind of their rock side.
Hey, can you do that bass beat? You sound like the Super Mario Brothers game.
With the boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. Doesn't it sound like the Super Mario Brothers
game? It kind of does. Do, 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 do,
do, do, do, do, do, do, do, do, sorry.
Do, 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 do.
Now, obviously, because the playlists are closed now, it didn't make either of your lists. But if you guys want to chime in on it.
No, it's and isn't the drum beat so great in that? It's so simple.
Oh, my God.
Larry does such a great job riding it. He hits the tambourine at just the right moment. It's and it's simple. Like you said, it's very simple. I've played that song multiple times on guitar. Even the solo is like dirt simple. It doesn't matter. It is three chords over and over again. Four guys having a blast, rocking out. That's Desire. And then him whipping out the freaking harmonica at the very end.
Exactly. Cool.
I'll take it. Yep. I'll take it. And I like, as I told you guys before, I like it when you two get simple and they sing about simple stuff and they rock out. That fits that MO, man.
Very true. Very great song, Brian. Good way to end your list, actually, which was, some of your songs were totally out of left field, especially a Christmas song.
I told but you it's going to be a great weird song. One.
It no, worked. It was. It worked, though. It works.
I agree.
You never know, Brian. You might win this one, but we got to see.
I hope so, but I don't know if the, I think the Christmas song might have been a stretch, but I'll be curious to see if people actually raise an eyebrow to that or if they're like, hell yeah, man. I don't know.
You never know. You never know, my friend.
So now's the point where, Chris, why don't we go track 1 through track 10? Why don't you tell everybody your playlist start to finish so that they can hear it all in one statement?
Absolutely. Happy to. So my number 1 is the song 1 from the 1991 album Achtung Baby. Number 2, Where the Streets Have No Name from The Joshua Tree. 3 is Bad from The Unforgettable Fire. 4, Sunday Bloody Sunday from the album War. Number 5 is City of Blinding Lights from How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb. Number 6, Stay, Far Away, So Close from the album Zuropa. Not numb. Not numb. Number 7, I Will Follow from their first album, Boy. Number 8, A Man and a Woman from, again, How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb. Number 9, Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me from the Batman Forever soundtrack. And closing out my playlist, number 10, You're the Best Thing About Me from the Songs of Experience 2017.
All right. Mine was, kicked it off with track 1, Pride in the Name of Love from The Unforgettable Fire. Track 2 was Vertigo from How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb. Track 3 was Bullet the Blue Sky from The Joshua Tree. Track 4 was All Along the Watchtower from Rattle and Hum. Track 5, trying to say this without laughing, Christmas Baby Please Come Home from A Very Special Christmas Volume 1.
I laughed.
I'm trying not to laugh.
But I mean that. But the thing is, I laugh, but I really mean it. I love that song. I can't tell you how much I love it.
And I love you for it.
Track 6, 1 from Achtung Baby. Track 7, With or Without You from The Joshua Tree. And track 8, Angel of Harlem. Track 9, When Love Comes to Town with B.B. King. And track 10, Desire, all from Rattle and Hum, my favorite U2 album. Gomez?
My track 1 is 1. We'll start off with that one. Track 2, With or Without You. Track 3, Where the Streets Have No Name. Track 4, Even Better Than the Real Thing. Track 5, Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me. Track 6, Pride in the Name of Love. Track 7 was The Sweetest Thing. Track 8 would be Sunday Bloody Sunday. Track 9, New Year's Day. And track 10, It's a Beautiful Day.
And believe it or not, through all 30 songs, we only had one trifecta, and that was one from Achtung Baby right at the beginning of the show.
It's amazing.
So a lot of good stuff here. Chris, man, this is awesome, dude.
I had a lot of fun.
I hope you'll come back and do this with us again.
If you'd want me back, absolutely. I had a lot of fun.
Oh, hell yeah.
Awesome. I loved exploring this. This was so much fun going back into all this with you guys, and just the back and forth was awesome, too. So
yeah,
really,
we would definitely love to have you back. But before you go, why don't you tell everybody where they can find the Film Exiles?
Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, I'm part of the Film Exiles. We are exactly what it says. We're a movie podcast. We're exiled for a reason. Our takes are horrible sometimes. That's the whole point. We like to hit movies from a couple different angles, and we like to watch, you know, everybody watches the popular ones. Everyone's into Star Wars and Marvel, and we review those too. But we like to, you know, we want to try to review, like, guys, Ford versus Ferrari from James Mangold that came out a couple of years. A fantastic movie.
Great movie.
Yeah, it makes $200 million. Nobody watches it. People need to watch those movies. Movies are an art form. They are an art form.
Howard the Duck. That's an art movie. Come on.
Yeah, kind of. You know.
Ferris Bueller's Days Off. There we go.
Okay, there you go. But no, we come from all different walks of life. We got guys from the UK, guys from Canada, guys from the United States, and we just try to hit movies from all different angles. So give us a listen. You can find us. We're obviously on all the podcast networks. We're on Spotify and everything, and Apple Podcasts. If you want to watch us on YouTube, we're there. Just look up the Film Exiles. Follow them on Twitter on the Vero app at the Film Exiles.
Nice. Chris, I can't thank you enough. It's been a while since I've seen you. Taking it back to the high school days. I know some of our alumni is probably going to listen into this. you know, I can't wait for them to hear it. And I can't thank you enough for coming on to the show.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. We appreciate it. Brian, anything else we need on this tonight?
Nothing much other than inviting our fine listeners to click the link in our show notes and choose which one of the three of us got it right.
Let's see what happens. Thank you guys for listening. Stay tuned for the next episode.
You can find Playlist Wars on Facebook and Twitter at Playlist Wars, on Instagram at Playlist Wars Podcast, on email at playlistwars@gmail.com, or via voicemail at 201-644-6498. That's 201-644-6498. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave a 5-star review and be sure to tell a friend or multiple friends about the show. Until next time, thanks for listening.